I have no relationships to disclose, except those of my research team. Unfortunately, the original masterminds of this intervention couldn't be here today, and those are the women of the Miami-Dade County Health Department, specifically the principal investigator, Ms. Evelyn Yula, and the co-investigators, Kira Villamizar and Martina De Verona. They had some logistic issues as far as travel. I'm sure some of you are aware with bureaucratic systems and health departments, they weren't able to get the funding or the time off, even if they wanted to use their out-of-pocket money to be here. So I am speaking for our little village and representing them this morning. There were many, many people involved with this research, and a couple of them are here in this room. Ms. Nakia Braxton was helping with the quality assurance piece of this research, and also Dr. Delia Lang, who did the data analysis. And I also agree that Dr. Rios-Montt did a wonderful job of background for HIV risk with Latinas, and I don't know if I need to go too far in depth with this, only to specify that Latinas are 5 times more likely to be diagnosed with AIDS than white women in the U.S. And just to reiterate that these numbers are grossly underreported by the current reporting systems, and hopefully with the new changes in the HIV surveillance system, that in maybe 4 or 5 years we'll actually have some more accurate numbers for us. I do want to point out that heterosexual contact is the most common route of HIV transmission for Latinas, specifically with partners that they suspected were engaging in high-risk behaviors, including injection drug use, having sex with multiple partners, and having sex with other men. So the women in Miami, of course, don't need HIV surveillance data to recognize that there is a problem with Latinas in Miami for HIV. And our colleagues at the Miami-Dade Health Department noticed that there was a dearth of interventions available for women in their community to target this problem. So they reached out to Ralph DiClemente and Gina Wingood, who are the original authors on the SISTA intervention, which was originally developed for African American women 18 to 29 as a risk reduction intervention for HIV that was proven to be effective. This intervention is CDC defined as evidence-based and has been distributed throughout health departments throughout the country. So they're very familiar with this program, but realize that it's made for African American women. So you can't just translate something and say, oh wow, this is gonna work for everyone. So they sought out technical assistance from myself and from our colleagues at Emory to develop an intervention that was culturally and linguistically appropriate for this population. They did formative research to doing focus groups to make sure that the, like Dr. Rios-Montt and our colleagues mentioned earlier, all of the graphics, the language were appropriate for a diverse group of Latinas, not specifically Mexican American population or South American population, that everyone could really understand what was going on with the curriculum, which is a pretty challenging task. This research was conducted in Miami by the Miami-Dade County Health Department and was supported by the CDC. In order to participate in the AMIGA study, women had to be Hispanic between the ages of 18 and 35, not married or living with their sexual partner, and they had to have reported having unprotected vaginal sex with a man in the 90 days prior to the randomization in the study. They must be living in Miami, not pregnant or planning pregnancy, and able to speak Spanish. It was a decision made that the curriculum would be delivered in Spanish, so all of the materials were written and delivered in Spanish. Participants were recruited via a convenience sample between the months of October of 2008 and 2009, and recruitment took place in health clinics originally. We recruited out of major health clinics, Borinquen, and also some health clinics at the universities at FIU. But they weren't as successful, so we moved into commercial shopping centers. It was actually a lot more successful recruiting at malls. And also through participant referrals. We didn't pay the participants to refer their friends, but it was around 75% of the population actually found out about the study through a friend or a neighbor. We screened 753 women during that year, so that's quite a lot of women. And 340, or about half, were eligible to participate. Those that weren't eligible were typically because they weren't having sex or they were using condoms 100% of the time. And also the third common one was because they were married. Of those women that were eligible, that fit the inclusion criteria, 74% actually participated in the survey. So we had a really high participation rate. There was a lot of interest in the research, and people were very excited that there was actually something out there for them. The 25% that didn't participate, we know that this is a fairly transient population, so we often got disconnected phone numbers or an incorrect address. So that was the main reason for non-participation. There were 252 women that actually completed the baseline survey within this randomized controlled trial. And the survey was given through a CASI, which was delivered in Spanish with a very nice Latina voiceover. One of our colleagues is also a singer and just a really nice voice, so we were really excited to have her. And it was delivered in Spanish with the headphones so that people with low literacy would be able to understand the questions that were being presented. It was about an hour in length and covered different variables, including sociodemographics, acculturation, depression, partner communication, self-efficacy, and looking at characteristics of male partners. We also looked at consistent condom use and condom behaviors. So although I would love to present all of the wonderful outcome data that we have from the Amigas study, it's still under lock and key, and this is just kind of a little teaser temptation for you guys to look out in the future for the results of this study and to hopefully be able to use this intervention in our future work. So maybe in about a year, maybe in the next APHA, you'll be hearing a lot more about the Amigas project. But today we're going to focus on factors that are associated with Latinas in this sample having sexual relationships with male partners who are at increased risk for HIV. So we're going to look at some of the variables that we use, specifically the dependent variable being male partners who are at risk for HIV, and some of the independent variables that we decided to look at as far as predictors of these partners. To determine in this sample which Latinas had male sexual partners that were at risk for HIV, we asked them if they had had sex with someone in the past 3 months that they thought had recently been incarcerated, or if they've had sex with other women, or if they had sex with someone they thought are suspected injected drugs. Unfortunately, in this data set, we did not ask about having partners having sex with men. So if I were to go back and change things, then I probably would have added that question. But these are the three main variables that we used. We did offer the option to refuse to answer these questions. So about 20 women did not choose to answer one or more of these questions. So our final data set was 231. And anyone that answered yes to any of the above questions were classified as having a partner that was at increased risk for HIV. In order to look at the predictors, we looked at depressive symptoms, and we used the pretty standard CESD scale. During the past week, I felt depressed in the number of times. The scale ranges from 0 to 24, with 0 indicating a low level of depressive symptoms and 24 indicating a high level. We also wanted to look at acculturation, and we used the Marin scale that Dr. Rios-Montt also used. I noticed in her quick passing through, so I'll touch on that a little bit. And it's a very valid scale that's been used with Latinos from Mexico as well as Central America. We wanted to use a short scale that could fit into this, 1 hour ACASI. We didn't want to overburden our participants. Okay, and that was a lower score indicated a lower level of acculturation, higher score, higher. We also looked at partner communication self-efficacy, which was developed by Dr. Wingood and DiClemente, which looked at whether or not these participants could insist on safer sex communication with their sexual partner. Can you ask your partner to use a condom in a sticky situation when they don't want to use one, when you're using alcohol, things like that? And the lower score indicates a lower level of communication. So just some basic descriptives of our population. We had a mean age group of 30. About 42% had less than a high school education, and really strong, consistent with literature, is that 71% did not have health insurance. So it goes back to those numbers. If you don't have health insurance, you can't get tested, or and just those numbers being really underreported. A large number were employed, but many of them still had to seek public assistance because they weren't making enough money, working 30 hours a week. And one key thing for this population is 90% were born outside of the United States, with an average age of arriving around 21 and living in the U.S. about 8 years. Our breakdown of place of origin, the most common group was from South America, particularly Colombia, and Central America and Cuba. In this group, 51.5% of these women identified a partner at increased risk for HIV, but they still chose to have unprotected sex with them. 90% of the sample at 30 days did not use condoms consistently, using the same variable that was mentioned before. And also, in 30 days, it was even higher, 94% were not using condoms consistently. We did conduct some bivariate analysis just to determine what our covariates would be for logistic regression, and the significant variables were age and also communication, self-efficacy, and depression. Latinas, we found that were younger were more likely to report having partners at risk for HIV, and those that were not as confident in communicating with their partners about safer sex were also more likely to have risky partners. And also those that reported depressive symptoms were more likely to engage in relationships with male partners who are at risk for HIV. So these results suggest that immigrant Latina who report depressive symptoms may be more prone to engage in sexual relationships with male partners who are at increased risk for HIV, also increasing their own risk for HIV STD acquisition. Being older had somewhat of a protective effect, as well as sexual communication, self-efficacy. They felt like they could talk to their partners about safer sex, and they actually chose partners that were less risky, which works well with the Hablando Claro curriculum because it's based at a younger age range, and it also supports that the idea of talking about safer sex communication. So we still need a better understanding of why Latinas engage in high-risk heterosexual relationships and a multifaceted approach of using some of the structural elements as well as the family-based interventions, including the individual interventions as well. Okay, thank you. These are our team.